Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Here's the thing. Justin, did you realize that The Boy from Oz wasn't the first time that Peter Allen was on Broadway? I mean, granted, it's Hugh Jackman as Peter Allen, but many people don't realize that the actual individual Peter Allen was on Broadway a couple of times, most infamously in the late 80s. Are you aware of this?
I only recently became aware of this. I did not know about it beforehand, but once I did learn about the show that he made on Broadway, I was like, that is very... It just didn't fit with the whole, you know, character of the story.
It's unusually uncharacteristic Peter Allen.
Very
much
so.
You know, he was always so himself. And then in the late 80s, he writes this huge Broadway show called Legs Diamond, and it's considered one of the more legendary flops. Now, granted, we were struggling in musical theater in the late 80s in America, but we were struggling so bad that we thought it would be a good idea to open a show cold, like they hadn't had any out-of-town tryout, in which Peter Allen was playing a gangster in Depression era times in the U.S., trying to break into show business, which is crazy because at this point he was so well known as being an Aussie and gay. And so now he's playing this like ladies man gangster from the United States who just wants to tap dance. And everyone was like not buying it.
No, I look, hearing you say it, something about that doesn't add up.
But here's the thing. It's not all bad. Like, the show isn't all bad, but it closes after only 60 performances. He still had a great sense of humor about it. I think on closing night, he said something like, "Thank you for letting me do this because I don't think I'm going to be doing it at the Tony Awards."
So he knew.
Yeah, he knew it wasn't flying. But then what's an even kind of more beautiful ending to all of that is that one of the greatest songs from The Boy from Oz, My Name in Lights, is from Legs Diamond, as are the two Judy Garland numbers. So, go figure, right? One of the biggest flops then ends up helping this show become one of the biggest hits. Welcome, everybody, to a musical theater podcast where we discuss the cultural and emotional impact of some of our favorite musicals in theater history. My name is Jeffrey Scott Parsons. You can call me Jeff. Today, we're covering the musical The Boy from Oz with another Boy from Oz. He happens to be the host of his own podcast called Theater Thoughts. Everyone, please welcome from Australia, Mr. Justin Clark. Hooray!
Hello. Thank you. Thank you so much.
How's summer on the other side of the world?
It's very wet at the moment.
Is that unusual?
A La Nina.
Oh, sure. Good old La Nina.
Yeah, so it's not very hot at the moment, which is disappointing because I recently moved to the down near the coast. So I was expecting like this beautiful summer where I could go to the beach, and I don't tan very much because I'm a ginger, so I just burn.
So just got to connect those freckles a little bit. But
exactly.
But now you just got mud is what you're telling me.
Yeah, just very sandy and very wet. So yeah, it's not the best summer, but we're going through it.
Tell everybody why you started your podcast.
So I run my own site, Theatre Thoughts, and it's a site basically to promote theatre in Sydney. And I'm trying to push it out to other states as well. And I go and review shows. So I started it mainly as when I was living in the UK, I just basically wanted to review shows and just get my thoughts out there. And then it's become just so much more busy with theatre kicking off in Sydney. So it became not just my thoughts, but trying to get everyone else on board and other people on board to share their thoughts as well. And then I became a little bit stagnant with everything, and I was like, how can I push this more than just a site? And seeing how podcasts are taking off all over the world, I was like, all right, I can give that a go. I'll give it a go. I like something new. So I started my own podcast, and it's been a journey so far of, you know, ups and downs and trying to get things right and everything going, getting guests on. But everyone's really keen to come on and have a chat about themselves and their shows. So it's, that's how it basically started. And it's going fun so far.
That's fantastic. I mean, you know how a pet peeve of actors is that when you tell people what you do, they go, oh, that sounds fun.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And
yes.
Twofold for podcasting, because everyone literally thinks, oh, that's fun. You just sit around and talk. Oh, if that was only the part of podcasting.
It's a whole process.
It's a whole thing for sure. Well, that's amazing. Questions, because I'm a little ignorant. I've never been to Australia. I haven't been to the UK yet, which seems really strange. That's like my motherland. That's my grandmotherland.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I had always heard that like UK people look down on Australia. Is that true?
Not that I ever saw. I found when I lived over there that they loved Australians.
Okay, cool. But like,
if anything,
but as like a fun little like sideshow thing, like like look at the Australian. See how cowboy like they are. I sometimes feel that way about being an American, where it's like, I do country line dancing. I'm a novelty.
I think it was for us, they find a lot of they do look down on. So like, for instance, we have these, a lot of our food, so we have like Vegemite and Tim Tams, which is, you know, as Australians we love them.
Yes, of course.
But you go over there and you talk about having Vegemite on your toast, and they go, oh, Vegemite,
oh,
like, don't you have Marmite? And then Tim Tams, they go, oh, we have Tim Tams, they're called penguins, they're so much better than Tim Tams. And you're like, oh, look, I don't know about that.
Are those cookies or like
biscuits? Yeah, they're like biscuits, kind of like the middle is like two wafers in between chocolate, but then wrapped in this really rich chocolate.
That sounds delightful. Oh,
it is so good. And then you do what's called the Tim Tam Slam, which is where you bite off one end, you dunk it in your tea, your coffee, and then you suck like a straw, and it melts all the chocolate inside. So then all the chocolate becomes like this really chocolatey drink, but it melts very quickly. So you got to do it very quick.
So you just got to get it down. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
We have a thing where you stack as many Oreos as you can, as though it were a skyscraper. And then you just shove them in your mouth. That's how we do things here.
Excellent.
Well, that's cool. I ask because today we get to learn a lot about Australia, and I'm so grateful you came on. The Boy from Oz, right?
Mm.
Have you seen it? Do you know about it?
One of the first shows I think I saw.
Really?
It was back when Hugh Jackman did it in Australia. This was, I can't remember if it was before he went to Broadway with it or after. I think, from memory, it must have been before he went to Broadway and won the Tony. So my mum took me to see it because she knew that I liked musical theatre. I know, it was the best. And she used to take me to like all the Disney on Ice shows that we had. So that's kind of like where it started. And then she took me to see The Boy from Oz. And it was mainly because she used to go with my grandma to go and see shows. And then she wanted me to kind of pick that up as well. So we went to see it. I didn't know anything about it. Obviously, I was really young.
Right.
And the first thing you see from him is he descends from a piano from the roof of this massive stadium onto the stage. And you're like, okay, this is not just like a show. This is an experience. It was next level.
That's so cool. I wasn't able to see it, but I have watched several bootlegs of said musical. Now, in past episodes, we have discussed star vehicles that, especially during the golden age of musical theater here in the States, there was a time period where star vehicles were the way to get people into the theater. Yeah. And the problem that came about with these star vehicles is that sometimes the writing wasn't that awesome because it was depending solely on the star power of the performer to make it work. And also, producers didn't love it because if the star gets sick or tired or both, the audiences don't come because they're not really interested in seeing an understudy or someone else play a role that was meant for that person.
Yeah.
the star vehicle has kind of died out since that time, you know, since we went into Phantom of the Opera, Les Mis, Wicked Time, where it's just like plug somebody else into the track and keep this juggernaut going. However, I think the closest that we have ever come in modern musical theater is Boy from Oz. This show was a success and is successful because of Hugh Jackman.
100%. I was actually reading an article like when we were setting up this podcast, and the article was actually talking about that specifically. And it ended on saying something like, when this show goes on tour, what will become of it? Because
right.
Obviously Hugh Jackman can't go on tour. He's a very busy man. So yeah, will the show have legs without? In Australia, it's come back without Hugh Jackman. There was an Australian performer called Todd McKenney who did it here, and it was still a success. Everyone loved it. Mainly, but again, it did rely on that star vehicle that Todd McKenney is a famous Australian performer, and I think without him in it, if it was just an unknown, it would have not played at one of the big theatres, would have to like start at a small theatre maybe and then work its way up. Mm-hmm. So, I do understand like why producers would be very iffy about having a star vehicle in performances.
Here's a question for you. In the 80s, the US started really getting into what has now become an incredibly popular Australian export, movie stars.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes, they did.
Yep. Mel Gibson, Nicole Kidman, Naomi Watts, Hugh Jackman, Russell Crowe, the Hemsworths, Margot Robbie, Kate Blanchett, Toni Collette. It's insane how much talent has come from over there. Now, in the case of Peter Allen, whose life and career this musical encapsulates, how does he measure up? Do most people there know who he is?
I would say a lot of people who was, let's say, like, they're the Gen Z era, mm-hmm. if I said Peter Allen, they would probably go, who? Don't know. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about what made Australian, the music industry, you know, famous and world renowned, his name is cemented in there. But in terms of who would know him, I would argue that not a lot of younger people would, because we don't really hear his music. I can't remember the last time I heard a Peter Allen song.
Right.
Apart from listening to this musical. Mm-hmm. So I think like with Australian exports, if I were to like pinpoint where it started, it actually, I would argue it started with Crocodile Dundee, basically Paul Hogan.
Yeah. I didn't even put Paul Hogan, but absolutely. That's right in the 80s, right there.
He started it. Oh, very much so. He started like the image of Australian kind of, who we were, and obviously it was very stereotypical, like, you mm-hmm. know, wrestling crocodiles and spiders and snakes and all that stuff.
Sure.
And then I think as our talent grew and grew, we did have Cate Blanchett, we have Hugh Jackman, and all these beautiful like theater people started becoming bigger and bigger as well.
Yeah, well, it's so fascinating to me to watch how art from Australia and New Zealand really just invade the entire world right at the top of the 80s. And Peter Allen is probably just before that big hit. Like, he's like late 70s into the early 80s, right?
Yeah.
So he is kind of ushering the door open for everybody to like run through later on in the decade. When you talk about, you know, the last time that you've heard a Peter Allen song, I think in my life, if I hear one of his songs, it's usually done with a bit of camp and kind of winking at how overly emotional it is, like "Don't Cry Out Loud" or the theme from Arthur, which actually won him an Academy Award. Like, those types of songs have become almost parodies of themselves in the way that they're used now, which makes it such an interesting catalog of music to pull from for a musical, because it's asking the audience to take a different look at these songs and possibly take them more seriously than you would.
Well, actually, in saying that, one of the songs that isn't included on the soundtrack from Boy From Oz anymore is Tenorfield Saddler.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a bonus track now on Spotify.
It is. And I was reading up on it and I was like, what do you mean it's not on the track? I clearly remember Hugh Jackman sitting there singing Tenorfield Saddler. It was a beautiful song, and it's probably the most autobiographical song in The Boy from Oz, because it's about his father who committed suicide. It's about Peter Allen. It's about his grandfather. Mm. It's a gorgeous song. It's very much like brings the whole show in on this one emotional point. And it's not included in the soundtrack, which I was like, that's really strange. And a very Australian song as well.
Yeah. What about I Still Call Australia Home? Is that a well-known song?
That is probably, if apart from I Go to Rio, that's probably like up there with the best known song from that show. That's like plastered all over Qantas ads. We've had so many renditions of that song. It's still that one, actually. Now that I say it, I should probably take back the last time I heard a Peter Allen song, because that is the biggest Peter Allen song. But it's just become synonymous with, you know, just Australia itself. Yeah, it's a gorgeous song. And in the show itself, it's actually a showstopper, because I don't know how they did it on other tours, but when I saw it, he's singing up on stage, he's got the massive chorus, and then at the big finale, they pull an Australian flag over the audience.
Oh my gosh.
Like this, yeah, it was, because it was in this big stadium that isn't in Sydney anymore. It's been changed to apartments, which is sad.
Boo.
Yeah, I know. I think it moved somewhere else. I think it's like the Kudos Bank Arena now. And they pulled from the stage the Australian flag all the way over this lower floor audience.
Oh my gosh, the patriotism, yeah. Though.
Yeah, very much patriotic, yeah.
That's really sweet. I love that. So has it reached the level of like My Country Tis of Thee or something like over here? Those are the types of songs that get sung before the national anthem at like the Super Bowl. You know, they're songs that kind of everybody knows.
Yeah, literally, because Qantas picked it up and ran with it as like...
What is Qantas? Sorry.
Qantas is, sorry, that's our main like airline.
Okay. Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay.
The one with the kangaroo on the tail.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. And that's like our main kind of airline. They picked it up as like their theme. So I'd say it's a better anthem than our actual anthem, to be honest.
Hey. We'll see. Yeah. So the cultural footprint already, just by talking to you this much, the cultural footprint of Peter Allen in your country is bigger than I knew.
Yeah, it's funny. Actually, no, the more I talk about it, the more you actually kind of reflect and go, oh, hang on a second. It's kind of like just secretly embedded in there.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shana Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shana Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Okay, so in terms of this musical itself, we can't really talk about the life of Peter Allen to introduce it, because that's literally what the show's about. We'll wait to get to that when we actually go through the show. Instead, we'll talk briefly about some of the people who made it happen. So first up is this guy by the name of Stephen McLean, who was obsessed with showbiz and was like a writer and journalist in Australia. And in particular, he was really interested in Peter Allen. He saw him perform, because Peter Allen, on top of being a writer, was this great showman in a time when cabaret singers were the thing. In America, we think of like Tom Jones, like that sort of Liberace even. You could find comparisons with him and Peter Allen. This kind of Vegas-y like lounge singer that was really, really popular at the time. And so he saw him do one of those shows and wanted to meet him. He interviewed him several times, followed him all over the world, and ultimately wrote a biography about him. And he thought that, you know, the story was really interesting, so he always assumed that it would become a movie. And instead, what it ended up becoming was a stage musical with Peter Allen's music to help tell the story. That makes The Boy from Oz a jukebox musical. The writer of the script is a guy by the name of Nick Enright, a famous Australian screenwriter. He was nominated for an Oscar for Lorenzo's Oil, which is a George Miller movie, another great film guy from Australia, Mad Max himself. The whole show premieres in 1998, but doesn't come to New York until 2003. And do you have any guesses as to why that would be?
The Australian musical isn't, I'd say in that time it wasn't a thing. We didn't have a lot of Australian musicals. And to be honest, we still don't have a great deal of like blockbuster Australian musicals, which is upsetting because there's so much talent here.
Absolutely.
We do have musical, like Australian musicals, but nothing to match this level, I'd say.
In terms of me being introduced into the musical theater world of Australia, the only person I knew of pre The Boy from Oz was Caroline O'Connor. Because she's you know, diva, right?
Yeah.
She's an amazing performer from Australia. And it's so interesting that you said that this show needed legs. I dare say that those legs needed to be Hugh Jackman's very long legs.
Yes.
So let's talk about Hugh Jackman, because this is a really interesting story. He grows up in Australia, right? His parents get divorced when he's very, very young. His mom moves back to England with his sisters, I think, and he stays with his dad and his brothers. He's a little bit girl crazy, and the only way for him to spend time with girls is to do drama.
Yeah.
But then what's so amazing is that on top of that, he finds a community and finds belonging. He graduates college. He does a couple of productions there, and it seems like pretty immediately gets offered a role on Neighbours, which that's like a whole thing over there, right? Neighbours?
Yeah, literally, if you want to be a star, you need to go through Neighbours or Home and Away. And it's been proven time and again, Kylie Minogue, Hugh Jackman, Chris Hemsworth, who else? I'm pretty sure Margot Robbie.
Margot Robbie.
Also, yeah, on one of them. So, yeah.
And Neighbours is like it's a soap opera, but a little bit lighter than American soap opera, do you think?
Yeah, it's not like the level of, you know, The Bold and the Beautiful. Sure. It's more kind of laid back Australia, suburban drama, but it's been going for years and years and years. So it's kind of reached that level of, they'd have to keep it fresh and do twists and turns. Oh, they're alive, but they're actually, I thought they were dead. But like that's, if you want to be a well-known star, you have to go through there.
You have to start on Neighbours. So he gets offered a role, of course, because he's 6'3 and gorgeous and can act. He actually turns it down though, so he can keep studying. And he goes to academy, like a performance academy, and really falls in love with theater. That leads to him being cast in the 1999 London production of Oklahoma. And this is, I can't tell you how obsessed I am with the fact that Oklahoma was responsible for launching Hugh Jackman's career. Like, how cool is that? This old Rodgers and Hammerstein show gave us one of our biggest stars to date. I mean, he is incredible in that. They filmed it. He's absolutely perfect. Do you like that version? It's the Susan Stroman choreographed, Trevor Nunn directed it, London Royal Shakespearean Company.
I haven't actually watched the full Oklahoma musical before, but I've seen the videos of him in it, and he is just, it's just him. Like, he's a star. He's just born for the stage, and he's got this charisma about him that you just can't help but love. And
an incredible voice on top of it all.
Incredible. So it's not surprising that it made him big. There's actually a story that he tells about being in Oklahoma and being cast as Wolverine at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So insane.
Yeah, yeah. So he was rehearsing for Oklahoma. I think he either started the rehearsals or was just about to go on. And he had the audition for Wolverine for the X-Men Marvel films. And he didn't know, like, if he was going to get it. He was very rushed for time. So he went there, did the audition. He thought it was like horrible. And then we all know what happened from there. He became Wolverine and became a star.
So I can't help but wonder if one of the reasons why it took so long for Boy from Oz to come to New York is because Hugh Jackman was just so freaking busy from 1999 on.
Yeah.
You know probably. What I mean? I mean, I don't have the number on me, but in 18 months, he made like 6 films. Like he was working like a maniac and also proving himself to be one of the most versatile actors that we have, because he's doing sci-fi, you know, with Wolverine. He's doing romantic comedy with Kate and Leopold. He's doing action with Swordfish.
Yeah, literally. And I remember one of the earliest roles he did in Australia was on an old TV show. I can't remember the name of it exactly, but it was where he met his wife, Deborah mm-hmm. Lee Furness. But she was actually a bigger star than he was.
Come on, Deborah Lee.
I know. She had this big name about it. It was Deborah Lee Furness and then newcomer Hugh Jackman. And they fell in love on set. And then obviously Hugh's just kind of surpassed the fame of it. But Deb still does a lot of... She's become more of like a social activist, and she does a lot for adopting children and adoption services, because that's what they did. They adopted their children. And but he loves her so much.
I mean, she's been very open with the fact that they really struggled to conceive, and she had miscarriages and such, and they've been able to adopt. And man, we gays love to like say Hugh Jackman's really gay, blah blah blah. These two people seem very much in love. Like it's almost nauseating.
Yeah, I remember my friends were always like, "We saw him in Boy from Oz. He's that whole thing is like that's a cover. I know for sure that's a cover." It's like that's a long cover.
Sure? Really?
Yeah, like that's a long cover to commit to. That's a very long amount of years they've been together to kind of have this image.
Yeah. And she seems to be a great confidant for him as well. Like they are always, he says that he rarely goes on an audition that he hasn't rehearsed with her first, you know?
Yeah.
Because you said she's a director, she's an actor, she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
When he does finally bring Boy from Oz to New York, he has cemented himself as a very hetero, hairy-chested heartthrob.
Yeah.
And so to decide to do a musical and to play a flamboyant Australian entertainer that most people probably don't know, I mean, I hate to use the word brave, but that's pretty cool.
It is. It's a massive gamble for sure.
It is also something I roll my eyes at, because this starts the trend of like, oh, straight men are so brave when they can play gay people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This and Brokeback Mountain both kind of fall in place around the same time. And like, I have to be grateful. I do, because would The Boy from Oz been as successful if it was played by an openly gay man? I don't know. I don't know if the world was ready for that.
Yeah, it's actually, that's an interesting conversation. Never really thought about that before.
I have no answer. It's all hypothetical, of course.
Yeah, very much, yeah.
You know, there's something there to explore in that. Okay, if that's what needed to happen at the beginning, then once the door is open, when do we let the people who probably deserve to play roles that are reflective of who they actually are and have that kind of representation, when does that kick over?
Yeah.
What I do think is really interesting about Hugh is that I talk about him like he's my friend. What I find really interesting about Hugh is that he does
We do it all the time. We do it all the time. We talk about like Hugh and Deb. Like whenever he comes back here, if you live in Bondi, the first thing he always does after arriving back in Australia is goes to Bondi Beach for a swim. So you're like, oh, there's Hugh. Hey, mate.
Yes, Bondi Beach. But he does have a very queer energy. And like
very much. Yeah.
And he can be as straight as he wants and have a wife and be completely happy. And also have this amazing queer energy that completely sells the show. So, like, more power to you, Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, you go for it, man.
Yeah. Great. So, Hugh Jackman obviously wins the Tony Award for Best Actor. This leads to him also hosting the Tony Awards 3 times in a row and doing an incredible job. He wins an Emmy for one of them. And any worries that this type of choice was going to dampen his career are quickly diminished, because not only has his career continued, but it's gotten even more interesting and varied with things like Les Mis and The Greatest Showman, which I think people also probably rolled their eyes at and thought wouldn't be successful, and he proved them all wrong.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the history of The Boy from Oz. It doesn't necessarily get great reviews. To be honest, everybody is undeniably impressed by Hugh Jackman, but they're like, the show's not that great, but man, oh man, is this a star performance? And it's enough for the show to run long enough to make money and recoup its investment and be a huge hit.
Yeah, and I think after like doing my research to kind of catch up on where Boy from Oz sits, that's probably the feel of it. It is like, it's a good musical, it's entertaining, but it does rely, it lives or dies on who you cast as Peter Allen.
And I will say, in Los Angeles a couple of years ago, there was a LGBTQ-focused theater company that produced a production of The Boy from Oz in a very, very small space. LA is known for like intimate theater. So we're talking like 99 seats, postage stamp size stage. And it was really, really well received.
Yeah.
And I think that when this show gets blown up too much, that's when it may start to feel like a Vegas-y slick cabaret act, which is fine, to be honest, because that's where Peter Allen comes from. I don't have a problem with that. But if you wanted to maybe be considered a more legit piece of musical theater, maybe take it down to its bare bones and see what you can find.
And I think that comes down to, I guess, who you want your audience to be, and down to Nick Enright and George Miller with their writing of it. If you want that big Vegas style performance, go for it. You got to go all out to get it. But at its bare bones, you can do that real intimate performance of it. But I think to get that right, you need someone who is able to like sit down and play the piano and brings that heart and soul and realism into the story.
Well, speaking of heart and soul, let's go through the heart and soul of the show. Yeah, like you mentioned, it begins with Peter Allen himself, right, recalling his life story, and he sings this song called The Lives of Me, which is really beautiful. After he kind of introduces us to the fact that, hey, I'm going to be literally narrating my own story, we go back to his childhood, which you mentioned is Tenderfield, right?
Yeah.
What is that place like? That's like big time country area.
Yeah, you have your big cities, obviously like Sydney, down where I live, Wollongong, which is like coastal city. And then if you go out further west, you're heading further and further into the outback, and you become smaller and smaller and smaller into such these rural towns that have such a mix of cultures, large indigenous populations, and like farmers. And to think about Peter Allen in a rural town, it's so juxtaposition, like the juxtaposition of it is just insane. So that it makes sense that he's like, I don't belong here. I need to get out.
To be clear, this is very much my childhood. I mean, I wasn't performing in local bars because I'm from Utah. We don't believe in alcohol. but you know, Peter is like tap dancing in the local bars for money. And like my grandpa would take me on cattle drives and have me dance for like the people who were buying the cattle. And I would shamelessly, you know, do it. No problem. So when I see it happen in this musical, my heart is just full for this little boy who on Broadway, by the way, is a freak of nature. This kid like pulls off all the stops. He's doing backflips. He's tapping his face off. He's jumping off of pianos. It's an incredible performance. He sings When I Get My Name in Lights. It's amazing.
That's incredible. I love tap. Like, I'm a sucker for tap. Anytime a musical does tap, I'm just there. If Hamilton is like one of my favorite musicals, but the only thing that could have elevated it to like all time status is if like they chucked a tap number in there. I would have just been like,
tap number in,
like, thank you, Lynn. Like, yeah, oh, I would have, if they chucked in a tap number for King George, no one could ever argue with me that it's not the greatest musical. Because it would just be amazing.
That's fantastic. Peter, I mean, that's really all of the childhood we get to see. But my gosh, when that little kid does that number, I guess we don't really need to ask for much more. So we immediately change back to grown-up Peter. And he joins up with his friend Chris Bell to become like the Allen Brothers, and they start performing on these variety shows during the like 70s. Mm. So they're singing this like really bizarre song called Love Crazy. I mean, it's just, it's a song of its time. They have enough success that they start traveling internationally and are performing in a Hong Kong hotel to like Chinese businessmen. And it just so happens, and this is absolutely bonkers, it just so happens that one night when they're performing, Judy Garland is in the audience. Literally the Judy Garland. And so in the musical, Peter convinces her to perform with them, and she sings, and they immediately hit it off. And Judy offers to take him to be her opening act in New York. They sing this song together called Only an Older Woman, which I don't know, but it fits perfectly into the show because Judy's becoming his mentor to take him to the next phase in his career.
I think that fits perfectly. Like, I mean, Judy Garland being who she was, you know, mentoring Peter Allen, who he was. It's just serendipitous, like, really.
Yeah. And I don't know what it is about, like, these grand dames of yesteryear, but they really are just fruit fly magnets.
Yeah.
They just can't help themselves. We gays just, like, flock to them and fall in love with them and create these really strange, intimate relationships that are somewhat undefinable.
I had this conversation recently with someone about the LGBT community just being so devoted. Like, once you love someone, you love them to the end, no matter what they do. You know,
100%.
Kylie, Britney,
Madonna. They're the Madonna. Those Madonna boys. She can do no wrong.
Yeah, literally. So it doesn't matter what they do. Like, the community will love them to the end.
Which, by the way, Kylie is still killing it. That latest album is amazing.
Yeah, she's incredible.
The gays in America are the only ones who understand how amazing Kylie Minogue is in this country.
Yeah, like, I mean, my mom, like, loves her. I mean, I think she's really good, but I don't think I'll ever understand Kylie on the level that the, you know, the LGBT community will.
For sure. For sure. So they go to America. When Peter arrives in New York, he's introduced to Judy's daughter, Liza. And once again, because of what we just talked about, they fall in love. You know, they sing the famous Oscar-winning song from the film Arthur, "The Best That You Can Do." And Judy is fully against it, I'm sure, because she recognizes a gay man when she sees one. But Liza ignores it, and they end up getting married. Now, Liza on Broadway was played by one Miss Stephanie J. Block. Did you know this?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so, and, you know, Stephanie Block is a huge Broadway star at this point, but this was one of her first major roles, and, man, a difficult role to pull off.
Yeah.
She is actually a Californian, and okay. I'm a member of a group called Musical Theater Guild that she was also a member of. So a few months ago, I guess it was last year, we did like this live event, online event with her, to raise funds for the educational outreach that I oversee. And I just want to play this little section of it because she was talking about playing Liza in The Boy from Oz. Here we go.
It was mammoth. It was scary. It was thrilling. And Hugh Jackman was a, you know, a perfect lead and a perfect co-star and just set the tone for any time he was at the rehearsal studio or on stage. And because of that, it was a gloriously happy and loving and supportive company. But trying to bring Liza Minnelli to Broadway was not an easy feat. And it was constantly changing the look of her, the sound of her, how far to, you know, go to be too show busy from the beginning when she was 19 to have that sort of progression into the Liza that we know now, and lots of discussions.
I mean, can you imagine?
I can't.
Because here's the, speaking of the gays, right? You're like bringing Liza Minnelli to life for these people who worship her. And it's a version of Liza that kind of predates the Liza that we all know. Right. So how exactly do you portray that? She didn't get great reviews, but I think that the poetry of all of that is that what she ends up winning her Tony for is Cher.
Oh, okay.
Which is another gay icon, right? So yeah. So like all those years later when she did the Cher show, here's another person that we all know with another voice, with another really iconic look and way of speaking, and this time she takes home the Tony. So yeah. Good on you, Stephanie J. Block.
Got there in the end.
Exactly. Also, apparently Liza did contribute ideas and wishes and desires to the show. She ultimately didn't go see it, and I don't blame her. From the story goes that Fred Ebb, like of Candor and Ebb, who wrote Cabaret, went and saw The Boy from Oz and then told Liza Minnelli, like, don't go see it. Your mom dies, your ex-husband dies, you don't need to see that. And
yeah,
like that whole sticky situation of other people watching her watch that, I mean, yeah. You can't blame her. She doesn't need to go live through that. She lived exactly. through it once, right?
Yeah, yeah.
This marriage is really sweet and also incredibly troubled because the more successful that they both get, the more loose he gets with who he's partying with. Ultimately, she confronts him about his homosexuality and their marriage ends at the end of the first act. He processes all of that by singing one of many, I think, showstoppers called Not the Boy Next Door.
Yep. Beautiful song. He done that one as the Tony performance.
Yes. Yeah. Also, he did like a little medley for the Tony performance, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
All right, so now we're in Act Two. Peter has gone into this stage that we've already talked about, his cabaret stage, where he's doing these one-man shows, and he meets this model named Gregory Connell, and they fall in love. He kind of becomes his stage manager and also designs all the lighting, like he kind of runs lights. And so, spoiler alert, when Greg contracts AIDS and passes away, Peter Allen would always perform right into the lights because that's where he would always be. Isn't that so sweet and sad?
Oh, that's really sweet.
Oh my gosh, it makes me all like weepy to think about it.
Yeah.
During this period of time when he's fallen in love is also when some of his greatest hits come about. He writes I Honestly Love You for Olivia Newton-John. He gives this really campy performance at Radio City Music Hall with the Rockettes. Okay. With the song Everything Old is New Again, and they like recreate it for the musical, and it's fantastic. This is kind of where I wanted to actually ask you about the role of kitsch and camp in Australian art, or specifically performance art, because when I think of a lot of my favorite Australian films, Muriel's Wedding, Strictly Ballroom, there is a level of camp to the performance. They're kind of kitschy, maybe a little grotesque. Chris Lilley stuff, you know, all of that. It seems to be part of Australia's humor. Am I reading that correctly, or what's your take on it?
I would say so. I think the two that you mentioned, like they became musicals. They became like probably two of our biggest musicals apart from Boy from Oz, you know, Muriel's Wedding and Strictly Ballroom. And then obviously you've got, she just won the Tony, Moulin Rouge.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I think one of our like kitschiest, I wouldn't say camp so much, but like one of our kitschiest sort of films, which is, I think it's probably the most well-known film in Australia, is The Castle. It's got so many one-liners from it that Australians quote daily, like whenever you go out somewhere and you know, it's beautiful surrounding, say you go to the beach, you just stand there, you go, oh, how's the serenity, and it's just like this, and everyone says it. Anyone who's like an Australian listening to it right now will know exactly what I'm talking about.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I've never seen this or heard of it. I have to check it out.
But yeah, but the kitchen and in camp in Australia, especially in the performance industry, it's very well received, mainly on the rise of the LGBT community, but there is a lot of change in our performance industry, and it's becoming more about showing messages and getting change happening. And I think through like the camp nature and kitchen in Australian theatre, that's how it's happening. It's a big change from Muir's Wedding Days, Strictly Ballroom Days, and now it's becoming a whole different beast in itself, which
That's
is
interesting.
A fascinating change.
So in many ways, and this is what I'm hearing, so correct me if I'm wrong, it's almost as though campy performances, our favorite drag queens, whatever, it's those types of performances that allow a greater message to be delivered because it's dressed up in something that's kind of ridiculous.
Literally. And the drag scene in Australia is massive. It is so big at the moment, mainly thanks to RuPaul, sure. I believe.
I watched the season. I did.
Yeah, it's great. It is great. I watched it with my friends. I was like, I didn't think it would be something I'd like, but I was like, this is brilliant. This is so good. And you're right. It's like we're getting these messages that we want to get across, but we wrap it in glitter.
I see some of that in Peter Allen, you know, who was very upfront about saying that his onstage persona was very different from his offstage, that he was, you know, flamboyant and over the top onstage and much more, I don't want to say serious, but a little bit more sober offstage, especially with his relationships. Hugh Jackman said that Liza Minnelli, when he met her, she grabbed his face and said he wasn't just over the top. He was also incredibly heartfelt and trustworthy, which I think is really interesting. So this way of like revealing yourself by being over the top first is something that I feel like is kind of Australian and maybe a really great representation to have here in this musical.
And I think, like, if we're getting really deep with it, it may come back to our inherent prejudices in Australia.
Sure. I mean, we all have them, but yeah, totally.
Yeah. And there was a whole thing a couple of years ago where we did what's called a plebiscite, which was controversial in itself. Basically, the plebiscite was... It was based around gay marriage and whether we should make it legal in Australia. But the plebiscite wasn't this is a vote of yes or no. It was a poll, and it was this whole controversial thing about, you know, why are we spending money on a poll for yes or no when you could just make it a referendum and just go, yeah, this should be legal.
Interesting.
And, you know, what Australians, like older Australians, the boomers, let's say, had of what people should be, but on stage you can be whoever you want.
Right. And you have all the freedom
to it. Yeah. And it's like the contrast between the two is fascinating. Like on stage, you know, we love it. We go, oh, I love this person, love this drag queen. But why don't we like them when they're off stage? Why do they have to be someone different?
Why don't they deserve any sort of writer privilege that you enjoy?
Yeah.
That's such an interesting question. And I also wonder if, as performers, we sometimes inherently feel that prejudice. And so we dance monkey dance to earn people's love because maybe we're not entirely sure we'll get it otherwise.
Yeah, and I think that comes back to Peter Allen, like where he grew up and the whole story with his father and the town he would have lived in. He would have had to learn to hide himself. But then when he's on stage and he's performing, he's doing these tap dance in these rural towns, everyone would have been like, oh, this is entertaining. Like,
yeah.
Look at this kid.
Look at this kid. We can be proud of him. Look at all that he can do. Yeah,
exactly. And then he, you know, had to break away from that because I guarantee off stage would have been a whole different story.
Yeah. So actually getting back to the story, the older that Peter Allen gets, the more open he becomes with his sexuality. I mean, you weren't out and proud at that time. Like that was not a thing. But he did fall in love with Greg. In the show, Greg tests positive for HIV and then contracts AIDS. And he finally passes away. Peter also becomes sick with AIDS. They actually use, you know, once again, this kind of campy song that I honestly love you, that we almost use humorously now, to really show how it's the love that Peter still has for this man that helps him push through his illness and keep working. Liza comes back at the end of the second act to connect with Peter, and they kind of make peace and realize that their careers wouldn't have been as successful without the other person. What's really cool about this show is, as if it hadn't been a star vehicle already, this last section is just freaking showstopper after showstopper for Hugh Jackman. He goes back to Australia and performs this magnificent concert and sings I Still Call Australia Home, which we've already discussed. We hear his mother sing Don't Cry Out Loud, which is just a really tragic sort of commentary on how they couldn't be emotionally vulnerable with each other.
Yeah.
And then right before Peter dies, he sings Once Before I Go. Talk about dying in style. I love that they give him this death, right? Because this song is just huge. And then it's almost like he goes to heaven, and heaven is I Go to Rio.
Yeah, which is just like his dream.
Which and is that his is dream such come true.
Such a number. It is like one of the best ways to end a musical I've seen.
Because this honestly could be a very sad musical, right? Where everybody dies and tragically from a disease that no one really understood at the time. So many things went unsaid. Here I go using that word again, brave. But it is brave to end a show this happy, you know?
Yeah.
Because ultimately, I think what Peter Allen's career was charisma and onstage energy. And you got to pay tribute to that. You got to pay tribute to that contribution.
Yeah, definitely.
And it just goes to show that the artists who create art are humans.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes the things that make them special are the things that also make their stories tragic. And I guess it isn't so much that the tragedy exists, but what they do with it. That's inspirational to me.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think as well, like, Peter Allen will always be immortalized in this musical now.
Amen. You're so right. You're so right. They are now synonymous.
Yeah, yeah, literally.
Thank you so much, Justin, for doing this with me. So much fun.
No, thank you. This has been great. I loved actually, like, kind of just delving into something and to revisit The Boy from Oz, you know, jumping way back in my memory is actually, yeah, it makes you feel really nice, really, really good.
As always, if you have recommendations for shows you'd like us to cover on A Musical Theater Podcast, you can always email me at amusicalpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media, Instagram and Twitter at A Musical Podcast. While you're at it, subscribe, rate, leave us a nice review. We would really appreciate it. We even have other things to help you feel connected to us in this lovely podcast community, including a Tee Public store where you can purchase designs based on episodes past and present. And don't forget about Patreon! ! Where for only $1 a month, you'll receive bonus episodes and special content made especially for you just to say thanks. Hey, Justin, how do we follow you and everything you're up to?
So you can follow us on our Instagram and Facebook. It's at Theatre Thoughts Oz. Oz is in AUS, not OZ, which is the shortened version.
Oh.
So yeah, at Theatre Thoughts Oz. You can also follow us online, theatrethoughtsoz.online, or just search us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the Theatre Thoughts Podcast.
Fantastic. It's so great to talk with you. Please enjoy your beautiful day over there. I hope the sun comes out. If not today, then tomorrow, to quote another musical.
Yeah.
And and to everybody out there, let's go to Rio.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm going to get my maracas out. I do actually have maracas from today. When I went
you
to Boy
You do
from Oz.
Not.
I do. I should have actually had them here. Why didn't I have them here? They're somewhere on my shelf.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.